Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I'm your host and in the studio with the lovely, charming, vivacious Mrs. Bobby Jean Bell, and of course her husband Jim is sitting here staring at me, grinning, wanting to say something, but he has no mic. Okay. Welcome to our very first 7 p.m. show. We have moved down. We are actually moving up in the world. We got a little earlier time slot, and we're just tickled. And actually didn't take any longer to get here than I thought it was going to. So, hey, I'm a happy guy.
And it'll be a little lighter when we leave later in the season.
It'll be a little easier to see that traffic. Yum. Yum. How was your show last week? We missed you.
Oh, it was great fun. We had Jerry Hall and Trick Shot, and they were great fun. And I know that concert will be able to be seen on SCV TV probably in about a week or so. And I listened to the podcast of your show with the twins last week with Eric and Al, and it was delightful.
Those guys are great, aren't they?
I'm so sorry I wasn't able to be here. It's hard to not be here for some of these, for these shows.
I know. And you know where he went? He was going to fly out that night. But he changed his flight to 7 o'clock the next morning. He went to the Oshkosh Air Show.
Oh my gosh!
And he was looking at all these old Grumman Flying Goose
of the new book.
Airplanes. Yeah, because of the new
of
book.
The new book.
Yeah.
Oh, how fun! Yeah, they're delightful.
Eric is such a great guy, and so is Al, and they just make wonderful, wonderful guests. We actually, speaking of guests, we have a couple on tonight. Wrapping up our show, about 7:35 to 7:40, we have an old friend coming in that's got a new book on the horizon, if it hasn't already been released. It's been released?
I believe so.
That would be Mr. C. Courtney Joyner. He'll be joining us a little while.
And he was our very first guest.
And he was on our very first show. So Court will be joining us in a little bit. And we have right now, I believe we're sitting here waiting and chatting aimlessly, waiting for Henry Park to call in. And Henry, did you fall asleep or are you eating dinner?
Or are you watching a great Western film?
Are you watching a great Western film? And of course, well, Henry, if you don't make it in, that's okay, because we do have someone on the line we can talk to. All right, going once, going twice. Henry, you're a loser. That's okay. We'll get you whenever you call in. Okay, here we go. We have a guest from Tennessee tonight, and he is, he's been just about everything. Let me get his bio here. His name is Gerald Dooley. He writes under the nom de plume of Bob Cole. Tonight we will be referring to, here is Henry. Of course. Hey, Henry. Henry, are you there?
Hello, hello.
Hello, Henry.
Enter and sign
Henry,
in,
Henry.
Please.
Henry, enter and sign in, please. Henry.
He's very shy today.
I hate it when he does that. Okay, let's see. Henry, you there? Henry? Henry Aldridge?
Yep.
Okay, we got no Henry. All right. Anyway, Henry, try calling back. All right. Here we go. Anyway, the gentleman has written several books about under the nom de plume of Bob Cole. He is a PhD in genetics from Iowa State. He is a biology and chemistry major, double major, certified public accountant. Hang on just a second, Henry. Don't go away. He's taught biology and chemistry at Belmont College, worked in the business office at Tennessee State University, primarily an African-American student body, worked in the United States Postal Service, and he is a history of student and enjoys classical music, and we're going to try Henry one more time. Henry, is that you? What's going on?
I don't know. He's being very shy tonight.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I've got everything on
maybe
for
he
him.
Wants to. Maybe he wants to call in when Court calls in.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Henry, is that you? Henry?
It's me.
Oh, there you are. Hi, Henry.
Hello. How are you? I'm sorry. I was so busy reading Court's book, and oh. I just forgot to. No,
just make us feel bad. I haven't read it yet. Of course, he hasn't sent me a free copy yet either, so.
Well, that's okay. I went to his house and demanded one.
Well, you could do that.
Did you go with a shotgun in hand?
There you go. So, what do you got on your blog, Mr. Park?
Well, I'll tell you, I feel a little guilty because you might remember all the stuff that I said was on the way in the roundup like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Well, it's still on the way.
Oh.
Because in addition to writing Henry's Western Roundup and being the film editor for True West magazine, I'm also a screenwriter. I've been doing a massive page one rewrite on a script I wrote more than 20 years ago, and that's taken up a lot of my time. But I promise that this Sunday I'll be posting, and in addition to all of the Fess Parker and Daniel Boone-related stuff, I promised I've got some really good news stories about upcoming Westerns and Westernish shows to share.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, well, now, first, there's a couple of Civil War-era TV series that premiered this year that kind of flew under the radar. A lot of people, including me, missed them. But WGN's Underground, their series about the Underground Railroad that smuggled slaves out of the South and into the free North, has been renewed for a second 10-episode season.
Wow.
That's great.
You know, Alexander Hamilton almost lost his spot on the $10 bill because politicians wanted to replace him with a woman until Lin-Manuel Miranda brought new interest to him with his hip-hop musical, Hamilton. So now, no, this is true.
Yeah.
Now the Underground folks are celebrating and maybe taking a little credit that Andrew Jackson is coming off the 20 to be replaced by Harriet Tubman, one of the guiding lights of the Underground Railroad.
Right, right.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear what Andrew Jackson's family has to say about it.
Well, but, probably not a whole lot, because there's a whole lot of them, so I suppose.
I suspect they can get pretty loud. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, riotous would
PBS
be good.
PBS has renewed Mercy Street for a second season.
Oh.
Now, that's set in 1862 around a hospital in Alexandria, Virginia, which was, of course, a Confederate city, but occupied by the Union. The show's creators felt that season one was a little too contained, so they're going to be opening it up a lot more for season two.
I would agree with that.
Oh, so you caught that, because I haven't yet.
Yes, I have watched.
I have not either.
I watched season one, yes.
Wow.
Well,
cultural.
Hopefully season two will be more exciting, or at least bigger.
Bigger.
Another new season coming, new series coming, Godless, a new Western series from Steve Soderbergh and Frank Scott, is set to premiere on Netflix in 2017. It stars Jeff Daniels as a despicable outlaw relentlessly hunting down his former partner, played by Jack O'Donnell, who starred as the World War II hero Louis Zamperini in Unbroken.
Right. Great movie, incidentally.
Mm-hmm. Great book.
That's what I heard. I didn't see it.
Well, it's not a Western.
And they've just cast the female lead, and it is the gorgeous and talented Michelle Dockery, who played Lady Mary Crawley on Downton Abbey.
Oh, well, we like her.
Oh, yeah.
She's a spitfire.
Isn't there a new Western coming on A&E? Not A&E. What's the one that Hell on Wheels was just on? AMC. Isn't there another Western starting on there?
You know, I don't know of one. I'm not saying there isn't. I hope there is.
I think there is.
Well, there's your assignment.
I will get to work and find out.
Yeah, there's your assignment, Henry.
Yes, I will do it, I promise.
If it's true, you heard it here first.
Right.
Okay.
And, here's another interesting one.
All righty.
3 years ago, writer, producer, director Rod Lurie had a Western series set up at the Starz Channel, but it never happened. And now he's got the property, which is called Monsters of God, back. It's with Brad Pitt's Plan B Entertainment, and TNT has just ordered a pilot. And it's set in Texas in 1867, and it's all about the Comanche Wars.
Oh, cool!
Wow.
Yeah. And finally, ever since Deadwood went off the air a decade ago, there's been talk about a revival.
Right.
Well, this week, HBO head of programming Casey Bloys announced that Deadwood creator David Milch is busily writing the screenplay for a feature version.
Yes. Going to tie up all the loose ends.
Which I think is a terrible idea. I want more loose ends so they can go back to series.
Yeah, well, you know, it's HBO. What are you going to do?
Right. Oh, and the September True West, which is just starting to come out, with the Tombstone Walk Down on the cover, includes my article on a terrific new modern-day Western, Hell or High Water, starring Jeff Bridges, which opens on August 12th. And, my gosh, oh, I just got word the very talented character actor David Huddleston died.
Oh, what a shame. I always liked him.
Yeah. Me too. He was one of those guys that could be so menacing or so funny as a lawman or a villain. He was in Rio Lobo with John Wayne, Bad Company, Blazing Saddles as Olson and Johnson, which I'm old enough to get. Breakheart Pass with Charles Bronson, several Gunsmokes and Bonanzas, and lots of other stuff. Really left a terrific legacy of work.
Yes, he did.
Yes, and as you know, you can read all about these stories and more in Henry's Western Roundup at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
You got through it.
I did.
You did. Thank you, Henry.
My pleasure.
And
have a great show with the sunlight.
Oh, and no, huh? And you can go have dinner now.
Okay, I'll do that.
We'll talk to you next week after.
I look forward to it.
Okay, Henry. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night, guys. Bye-bye.
Good night. And as you all know, Henry Park from Henry's Western Roundup.blogspot.com. And as you also know, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California, and of course, our friends at Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And actually, the president of Target Freight was going to try to be here tonight. He wound up having to go home a day early, so we didn't get him. He promised me next trip out he would get in here on a Thursday and come into the studio with us so we can see Mike. But, you know, we mention them every week and every show, and we mention that they have a full truckload service. That's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry that gets your freight there every time at rates you need for your transportation costs? Call today, 1-844-653-7789. That's 1-844-653-7789. And tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block. They'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are shipping LTL, you are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did, and I totally agree with that. And if you want to call in tonight and talk to our guest here in the Writer's Block, number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And now we're going to be joining our guest who has been on hold for, 15 minutes now.
Very patiently waiting.
Very patiently waiting. Oh. Okay, are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I'm okay.
Hey, we talked about this last night, and we are going to call you Bob.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. I have to do this because we spoke about this last night. Did you ever get a hold of Amazon?
Not yet. I've gotten a hold of the publisher.
Oh, you did?
And, the people that sell that I publish the book with. And the idea is simply this. If they use somebody else's bio, who are they paying money, my money or their money, to that same person?
Well,
so we'll find out.
That's a pretty good bio, though. I mean, you were a rock and roll DJ.
No.
When you were only 14 years old.
Well, I've never been in the music business, so I don't know.
He is a great fiction writer, though. So
yeah. Hey, we're going to ask you a series of questions here, Bob, and we kind of shorted everybody on time tonight, so we're going to try to get through this as quickly as we can.
Okay.
Number one is what started you writing? What brought you to the pen and to the paper and the storytelling process?
Oh, I don't know. It's been many years ago. I've been writing things, various things, short stories. I did a little bit of poems, but I'm not really very good at that. But it's been basically in school,
mm-hmm.
and in high school, and there I can't really say what started it.
Mm-hmm. You have written a series of books. The one that you happen to have sent us, we'll be talking about in a moment, but you've written one called One Drop, and that actually is quite a phrase that is used in the South today. Can you tell us what that means?
Hey, just a minute. Well, the Ku Klux Klan has interpreted a Bible verse, Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 2, to mean, excuse the language, if you got one drop of nigger blood, you is a nigger. Okay, that's where the term one drop comes from. And the story is about a vicious Ku Klux Klan family that wakes up to the fact one day that they have significant amount of black ancestry.
Well, that must be hard on the old and the old sheet wearing.
That would be.
It would be, that totally.
Kind yes, of turn things on their head.
So that's where the one drop comes from, and that's roughly what the story is about.
Uh-huh.
Now, that story and the one you got are both in the hands of a literary agent.
Mm-hmm.
Pew's Literary Service, and her name is Tricia Skinner. So what happens to them there from, I don't know.
Okay.
But they're out in the world somewhere. So I could self-publish both of them, but
mm-hmm.
I think that both, one or both of them will go with a regular publisher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the one that you sent us, No Trumpets, No Bugles, it's the story of an African-American family. It was actually quite a story. I don't know how else to put it. It was just, I mean, quite interesting in the whole family tree, watching the tree grow from one young boy coming from Africa to an entire family at the end of the mm-hmm. book. And it was just kind of a fascinating read to see that happen, time period by time period, time frame by time frame, year by year, through the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, up through the Spanish American War, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam. The stories just and the kids kept growing and growing and growing, and the population kept growing on this one particular family. It was kind of neat to watch.
Well, it winds up, there's a situation which is happening in the South here. In fact, I see it more and more. We are a mixed race country, and it is becoming more and more mixed. And whether I like it or not, or you like it or not, or the man in the moon likes it or not, it doesn't make any difference. It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the local grocery stores, and you'll see a black mama and her two half-white kids, small kids, or a white mama and her half-white, half-black kids. I won't say it's prevalent. It's not the majority by any means, but it is. But it's coming here much more common, and you can see it a lot more. And you can see it out in public a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And that is somewhat addressed in that book, because the couple at the beginning of the book are white, and they have two, their parents, all four of the parents involved, are light brown. They're mixed race. And then you have out of mixed race environment, you have children that come out that are white enough to pass for white, and they happen to meet. One of them's in St. Louis and the other's in Nashville, and they don't know about each other, and they happen to meet at a university where these two people go. They're wanting to get away from this race business.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get away from it up there. That's what they're trying to do. And so it involves somewhat of the picture of what is going on now, and that is the mixing of the populations. And down the road, again, whether what I may like or not like, or what you may like or not like, we're becoming a mixed race. We are a mixed race country, and it's going to get more and more mixed. And that's what is pointed out in the book, mm-hmm. or at least is in the book. And it goes through some of the civil rights things. Now, the history of what you read in the book is accurate, very accurate. The story is fiction, but the history is not. So I don't know what you would make of it there. Now, you're out on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. You have a different environment out there. You have more Asians, for one thing, and more Hispanics. And so I don't know exactly what's going on out there, but I imagine it's a lot of the same type of thing.
Bob, I want to get back to the book for just a second, because okay. you're talking exactly to a point I was going to bring up. The book is, to me, it is fiction, but it is absolutely, it seems dead on when it comes to legislation and all of the events that happen. You nail them down by year, by politicians, especially as we come out of the Civil War and into the Civil Rights Movement and up through, up to 1973. The book begins in 1756, and it ends with a wedding in 73. And as Jim was saying, we follow this family. I'm curious how you did the research, even the sort of fiction part, the characters, the situations that you put them into feel like they could have certainly been based on real activities. Tell us about the research.
Yes, they were. Now, again, I tried to be as historically accurate as I could be. If there are any mistakes in there, I'm sorry for it, but they're not intentional. I did not try to fake anything in the history. All of the civil rights events were those which, the best I could tell, occurred. And that part of it is true. Now, one thing you will find now, and among particularly the younger African Americans, they do not know their own history. I'm going to say it that way. But if anyone reading this thing, the history point is correct as best I can tell. And as far as the situations, not exactly. I put people in real situations. Now, I didn't try to mimic anything, but you will have true feelings expressed, and maybe this is the wrong way to say it, but the history itself is very true, as best I could do it.
Yes, I definitely felt that, and I felt like I was getting a really great overview, but with detail, of the history of the civil rights movement as well, which I'm not that versed in. And I couldn't help but think about our recent conventions, political conventions, and the Democratic convention talking about Black Lives Matter, and that term came back to me over and over as I read this book. It was a fascinating. You take us on a fascinating journey, and it's really educational as well.
Well, that was the intent. There's no need to make the history fiction when you can use the real history. Mm-hmm. The real history handled everything. And I just tried to put people in the real history. Now, Black Lives Matter, let me add to that just a little bit. If you want people to respect legal authority, then legal authority needs to respect people. Whether they're black, white, green, red, yellow, or purple makes no difference. Maybe that's an extension of Black Lives Matter. And if you look at what's going on in the world and the complaints of the Black Lives Matters and others, you find that the legal authority often does not respect people. And I could name some situations in Tennessee, and not necessarily referring to African-Americans. Mm-hmm. But it's a broader situation than just Black Lives Matter. I'm not knocking their points. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to throw cold water on what they're doing, but in my view, it needs to be expanded.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If legal authority does not respect people, then people are not going to respect legal authority.
Sure.
And that's a point there, but that's not, well, a little bit. I put it this way. Reverend Kelly Miller Smith is mentioned in that book, and I attributed to him something that he didn't say, but I gave him the words, and this is part of the fiction. And he was a real preacher, and he was a real instigator in the civil rights movement, and I put to him that he contacted the Nashville Police Department about some indiscretions they were doing, and told them if they wanted the people to respect the legal authority had to respect them. And I think that's in there. I'm not sure.
Can't
tell you the exact line, but yeah. that is in there. I put those words in there and put them in his mouth. But well, I guess that's part of the fiction, but it's still very, very true. A lot of the things happened mm-hmm. that were in that book, and maybe I'm wrong. I'm Caucasian if it matters, but I wrote that to a high degree from the African American point of view, mm-hmm. and the result, because your characters, your major characters there were African American.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to talk to the talk in their point of view and in make the case for them. And that's what I tried to do. And I don't know. Now, there is one thing I did not send you, and I should have sent you. And I'll just make a brief reference to you. If it's of interest to you, I'll try to get it put to you. And that is, on the Warrior, I did get, I'll put it this way. In 2004, I underwent treatment for chronic lymphatic leukemia. And I went through some chemo, and apparently it worked. But the next 8 or 9 months was pretty rough,
mm-hmm.
not because of the leukemia, but because the chemo knocks down your immune system, and
sure.
that was my hospital due to infections. But during that time, I had done this writing, and there are the three books there,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking, you're going to get them out, you're going to have to get them out now, because you don't know whether you're going to live or die. And so I pushed to get them out. The Warrior is basically anti-nuclear, and I got back a letter from, well, an email from an unsolicited email very much praising the book. It's quote, I'll quote, "It's the best. I enjoyed it thoroughly, gobbled it down in only 3 sittings. I have read few self-published nuclear-themed novels, and yours really pulled it off." Now, I don't know if it would help you or not, but I can try to get a copy of that to you. I don't know if it would help. What you're trying to do is promote this radio program.
Sure.
That's what you're trying to do, and I don't blame you. And if you could use that possibly to promote your program, I'll try to get it to you. But now we can swing out of that and get back to the book that you saw.
Well, actually, we have a question that we want to make sure that we ask every single week of our authors. Can you tell us, do you ever experience writer's block? And if so, what do you do about it?
If I ever experience, yes, we all do. And one thing I do is I try to have a notepad or something with me at times, because you don't know when you're out somewhere, when here comes a thought or something that you can write down, and sometimes you bring it back and put it into something that you write. It's kind of hard to get over it. You just have to, what I do is I turn, go back over what I have already written. Mm-hmm. I try to go back over it and over it and over it, and then boom, here something happens. Now, let me say something else. I don't know how many of your authors are telling you the truth on this, but I'm going to tell you the truth of it. When I start a story, I have a beginning point, a vague ending point, and the vague ending point can change. But as we go along through the story, my characters talk to me. The story tends to develop itself a lot. Now, it was Tom T. Hall, one time said, and he was that he had to get back to the computer because he wanted to find out what was going to happen in his story. And you'll find that several of the people who write have they don't use an outline, but they have something similar to what I describe, and that's how they do write on their stories. They wait for their characters talk to them and point them in a direction. And that's partly what has happened with me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I don't know what else I could say that would explain it. I hope you understand what I'm saying. I'm not crazy.
No, we totally understand.
No, nobody thinks you're crazy, Bob.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent answer. We totally get that.
We do need to find out, though, what is your contact information? We got to run along here. So give us your contact email and website or whatever you have available.
How people can find your books.
Let me just give you GWDOOLEY. I think you already have it.
Right.
GWDOOLEY at MSN.com.
Okay.
I'll repeat it. GWDOOLEY at MSN.com. Now, I will say this. I was at a Tennessee writing workshop here on the 25th, and I'll be going to a Middle Tennessee State University writing program. Let me see if I can get the exact name of it. Fall Conference on September the 10th, and I don't know what will develop from either of those. But listen, anything I can do to help you and help promote your program, let me know. Because I'm going to do this. There is a black lady that I've had contact with that has done some writing, and I'm going to tell her how she can look up your past programs.
Okay.
Now, I don't know whether that'll lead. I don't know where that'll lead to.
It gives us all good numbers.
Right. Yeah, just.
Anything that you can do. But anyway, we can. I will do try to get your programs more well known here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
And maybe that will help.
Oh, good
okay,
enough.
You've got somebody else coming in.
Yeah, we do, actually. So, but you got a minute or two, so wait.
Okay.
I just want to say that thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been a hoot having you on. And we thoroughly did enjoy your book, No Trumpets, No Bugles. Go ahead.
If you want to buy Bob's books or check them out, they're published by Infinity Publishing, and you can get them at www.buybooksontheweb.com. com, which I had fun popping around in there today.
Okay.
She always does.
One thing, and this is Jim. I'm going to make you a suggestion.
Okay.
This is something I learned, and you can pass this suggestion on to any and everybody you want to.
Sure.
Okay? You wear glasses.
I do.
And if you look at your picture on the web, you'll see that there's glare coming off of those glasses. Now, one way to cure that is that you get your set of frames with no lenses in them. And when they take your picture for something,
that is so
then
smart.
You have those glasses that will be the ones that you wear.
Oh, my God,
oh my
Bob.
Gosh, okay. That is so smart. Thank you.
All right, we're going to let you go.
Listen,
yeah.
Okay, take it easy.
Okay, you guys, take care. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bob.
Bye-bye.
What is it? That is so smart.
I know, huh?
I never would have thought of
that. Me either. Never in a million years.
I'm sure every professional photographer knows that, but we love to learn new tips.
We do, and I believe we have Court Joyner on the phone with us right now.
Another gentleman that wears
glasses. Well, there are a couple of friendly voices.
Hey, give me a minute here, Court. We got to do a commercial, then we'll be right with you.
Okay.
All right, don't hang up. Don't be like people in New York.
I promise I won't.
Oh, okay. Sutter's Mill in Simi Valley is one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura County. At Sutter's, you will find casual dining with a touch of elegance and a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. Their well-trained staff strives to provide their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecue pork ribs, deep-fried chicken, or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corkage fee. Visit their website at sutters4dining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and menus. They also offer a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 to close. Enjoy. For reservations, call 805-520-4797 or go to www.suttersfordining.com on the web.
We had a wonderful dinner there last Tuesday night, and the gals that waited on us, served us, were so fun.
They were.
They really made the night.
So what do you say, Mr. Joyner? Good talking to you, my friend.
Well, always got to call into the writer's block and see what you guys are doing.
Well, we're actually just making money, hand over fist.
Oh, gosh. Liar, liar, pants on fire.
I do have to tell you, though, Court. We have a great listener base. It's huge.
Yeah, we do.
It's huge.
And lots of podcasts listening.
Well, this is great because I think I was your first guest.
You were our first guest. In fact, we mentioned that earlier. You probably were sleeping.
No, he's probably busy. Probably writing. So, Court, you have
a new
book.
You do.
And it is a follow-up to the first book. Tell us about Shotgun, The Bleeding Ground.
Well, this is really a direct continuation of the first Shotgun that came out from Pinnacle Books, Kensington. And it took me a little while to write the sequel, and I really did it as a direct, you know, Jim, this really is a direct almost serialization,
mm-hmm.
because the story was rather large and had a big canvas with lots of action and all that stuff. So it just ended up being, if you will, this giant spaghetti epic, I guess, really wasn't what my intention was.
Ennio Morricone in the background?
Exactly. In fact, in Bleeding Ground, I have these two young girls who are, their dad is one of the bad guys, and they sing at different parts in the book, so I'm trying really on paper to capture that idea in the reader's mind of the female chorus in the Morricone scores.
Ah!
So because I put the lyrics to the songs, they're interspersed with the dialogue, so it's to try to create that effect on the page. I don't know if it's too successful, but that was certainly it's fun to experiment. But we've done very well, way beyond, I guess, kind of what my expectations were. And the first book was in all the retailers, but we were not in Target, for example. But the second book has been, we got Target, we got Walmart and Kmart, and we got Hudson's Booksellers at the airport, which was quite a coup. Yeah, that was a real nice jump up for us. Yeah. And, of course, all the Barnes & Noble outlets. And Random House actually now is the parent company to Kensington.
Oh.
So they have all of my overseas sales.
Oh, wow. So
that was kind of also a nice little caveat. And I'm just signed to write 3 and 4, and the first book is going into its fifth printing in January.
Has it been printed in other languages too, Court?
It has. The first book did come out in Germany and Spain. I've not seen those editions. The second book, I think, is going to be in a lot more international editions. And also, it both, of course, came out as hardbacks in a large print.
Okay, is it going to be in Swahili?
It's also going to be audiobooks.
Is it going to be in Swahili?
That is the preferred.
You know, it hasn't made it yet unless it's in Swahili.
Swahili.
Now, am I right to understand that you've added a couple of well-known characters in this book? We got Pat Garrett.
Oh yes, I decided that. To kind of, you know, include some historical characters. So our one-armed doctor gets involved with Pat Garrett and John Chisholm and a very young Mr. Bonney when he was riding for the Chisholm Ranch. And he is actually a shotgun fan and has John Bishop sign a Penny Dreadful. And he thinks
that's
cool. And he has one arm and the gun. Yeah, it's you know, I really you know, jumped off the high cliff, I guess, but it's fun. But the third book actually is going to be a standalone, and is going to be really focused on the character of White Fox, who was in the first book, and it's about them tracking down renegades who have been poisoning members of her Cheyenne tribe. And so that's going to be quite a bit different. That's my Valdez is coming.
Oh.
So are you telling me we don't have White Fox in the second book?
Well, no, she really isn't, because since the second book picks up where the first book leaves off, and it's only, the story continues for only about a few more weeks. You know, she has kind of walked away from him because of all the craziness, and so and his battling with his brother and all the stuff going on in the prison outpost. So she takes a break and actually goes back to her home, and we do see her sprinkled a little bit in the second book. But there's actually another woman who enters John Bishop's life.
I liked White Fox quite a bit, and I was glad you didn't kill her off.
she is very much the focus of the third book.
But,
you know, well, Jim, we all know that when you get involved with this series, and that really wasn't what my intention was, that's kind of how it evolved. Once you kind of established a little bit, then you get to play within your own format.
Oh, absolutely.
We're at that point now, which is really neat. So
I had a couple characters that bounced in and out of some books too. They're Lenny and Whitey. They were like bounty hunters that weren't very good, and they turned out to be tried of robbers, and they weren't very good at that. And highwaymen, and they weren't very good at that. And every time they get money, they lose it. And these guys are just morons. But for a chuckle, they're pretty good.
Certainly, it's what Elmore Leonard always did, which I thought was so wonderful, less so in the Westerns than he did in his in the crime fiction, where you had characters from different books washing into other books all the time. And I always thought that was so terrific, because it really is creating your own world.
Well, you know, as you're writing a series, you almost have to do that. Because you can't just forget, you know, a character shows up, boom, he's made his mark, and then he leaves and you never hear from him again.
No, because every character has their own story.
Exactly.
And whether it's over a whole series of installments or one or two or what have you, I always think you want those grace notes in there. Mm-hmm. And also, I love that continuity.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So to change the subject slightly, is there any update on the return of Captain Nemo?
Well, actually, there is, and a very surprising and wonderful one. The book was turned in. The new title is Nemo Rising.
Nice.
It comes out April 11th of next year. It is already available for pre-sale on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Oh, cool.
I had no idea about this because I still have to do one more pass based for my editorial notes. But Tor McMillan did a just sensational cover. It's mm-hmm. just fantastic. And we really hit the ground running. We had really good pre-sales, mm-hmm. Very high. And it's a hardback. So this is all kind of, again, I'm kind of the new fellow on the block, so I'm stumbling around a little bit. But this is really kind of rewarding. So we'll be Captain Nemo for McMillan and Shotgun for Pinnacle, and I'll be jumping back and forth.
Cool.
So I know that our great bookie, Jerry, is already thinking about 2017, so we need to get you on the April schedule already for next year, Court.
Well, no, please
actually.
Do. It's just wonderful. And actually, if you guys have a smartphone right there with you, you can pop in Nemo Rising and take a look at the cover. And it really, really is impressive.
Hey, look,
I didn't have anything to do with it. It's just they just did a spectacular job.
I have a proposition for you.
Oh.
Our guest on September 1st had to bail on us. So we have a show that's open on September 1st, and we thought might possibly be a show featuring C. Courtney Joyner and Henry Park. What do you think?
Oh, that sounds great.
In studio.
Yeah, in studio. We want you live.
We want you in here so we can beat you mercilessly around your head and shoulders.
Oh, my gosh. I'm ready for the challenge.
Okay, well, put it on your calendar, and we'll give Henry a holler and let him know, too.
Okay, oh, that'd be wonderful.
Oh, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. And you guys, we just had Eric Heisner and Al Bringus again, and they were like a hoot last week. So, I mean, you guys are really good, too.
So, thank you very much.
Sure.
I'd love to do it. In fact, Jim, I've been doing so many Western commentaries and things like that, but I just did for a company in England, and I hope it comes out here, but I did the Culpeper Cattle Company with Bo Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And I got Bo to come on and do the commentary with me.
Great
and
movie.
It is so wonderful. But also, for anybody who loves Westerns, it's also a little melancholy, and mm-hmm. That's why I also really hope it comes out, because Bo, of course, there looking at all of his friends when he was a young actor mm-hmm. coming into the business who are now gone.
Right.
And
right.
He talks about that quite a bit as a young guy. Here he is, working with Robert Ryan and Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas and all of these people and just barely out of his teens.
Yeah.
And it's a terrific commentary, and that's for Signal One at 20th Century Fox. I mean, again, I had very little to do with it other than to say, Bo, please, let's start talking. And he just did a fantastic
job. We hear that all the time, but we always hear your name being bandied about Hollywood, too. So, I mean, hey, look, I hate to cut you a little bit short, but we do have to announce who's going to be on our show next week. Which is a lady named Jackie Bohr, who has written a book called Logan, and it is about her, I think her grandfather? Grandfather or great-grandfather who was the sheriff of Nye County in the first part of the 20th century. And it's a fascinating story. And he was up in,
Sheriff Tom Logan.
Tom Logan, and he was up around, what the hell is the name of that town up there?
You're putting me on the spot.
But anyway, not Pahrump, that's lower Nye County. He's up in Nye County, so. Anyway, Jackie Bohr's on next week. Okay, Court, September 1st. September 1st.
I'll be there with bells on.
Well, we can forget the bells, but just be
here. Will be there, too.
We'll be here, too. We'll pluck the bells from your coat. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Court. Always a pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you guys so much for, sending up the flare and, letting me yak a little bit about the bleeding ground.
Oh, and, of course.
And the cover to Nemo Rising is phenomenal.
We just looked at it. It's awesome.
Oh, man, you see it? Yeah,
oh,
they
yeah.
really did a great job. I wish
awesome.
I could take some credit for it, but they just did it.
It is, like, totally awesome.
Yeah, it's like, I got to read that book.
There you go. Well, April.
Yeah, well, I'll pre-order it now.
All right, Court, we got to go.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, and thank you all for listening. We have both guests tonight, actually.
Yes, three and, guests. We had three guests tonight.
We did, and then Jackie Bohr next week with Logan. And, of course, September 1st now, you can look forward to see Courtney Joyner and Henry Park in studio with us. And this is going to be the end of us tonight, our first 7 o'clock show. Thank you all for listening. It's been a wonderful experience, and we hope you all join us next week on The Writer's Block.